On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Senator John McCain was once the presumed GOP frontrunner for president. But with sagging poll numbers, lagging fundraising, and his much-mocked tour of a Baghdad market, it hasn't been looking good for the Straight Talk Express out of Arizona. Yesterday, McCain tried to recharge his campaign with a big speech on Iraq that went straight into the teeth of American public opinion on Iraq. His message, we must hang in and prevail. This hour on Point, the McCain question. Can he embrace the war and find a path to the White House? Joining me first today from Washington is Michael Shear, reporter for The Washington Post. He covered Senator McCain's speech yesterday at the Virginia Military Institute. Michael Shear, thanks very much for being with
us. Hey, Tom, how are you?
We're good. Give us the bottom line from McCain's speech yesterday. Where's he pointing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Senator McCain is doing exactly what you said. He's trying to reinvigorate this campaign, which has been, which was so much the front runner just several months ago,
yeah.
And now is looking like it's trailing the field. He went to Lexington, Virginia, a kind of cold and gloomy day yesterday at the Virginia Military Institute, and it sort of mirrored his speech, which was also somewhat gloomy. I mean, he says, you know, there are some hopeful signs in Iraq, and he urges the country to persevere, but basically paints a pretty grim picture of a a need to have steely determination to fight out this war. And he does that mindful of the political ramifications for himself.
Michael, I want to ask how you read his strategy in that, but if you'd be good enough, let's listen for just a minute here to kind of the money quote from John McCain at the Virginia Military Institute yesterday.
We who are willing to support this new strategy and give General Petraeus the time and support he needs have chosen a hard road. But it is the right road. It is necessary and just. Democrats who deny our soldiers the means to prevent an American defeat have chosen another road. It may appear to be the easier course of action, but it is a much more reckless one. And it does him no credit, even if it gives him an advantage in the next election. This is an historic choice with ramifications for Americans not even born yet.
John McCain yesterday. Michael Shear, he's saying we've chosen a hard road to support this surge, but the right road, necessary and just. But isn't this also the road that's led him to these poll numbers behind Fred Thompson, who hasn't even declared for the presidency?
Yeah, this is you know, it's interesting. The only time I've ever seen a sort of flash of anger from John McCain in the last month is when people sort of intimate that perhaps he's taking the position he is or somehow gaming his position on Iraq to get some sort of political advantage. I mean, he says absolutely not. I'm doing what I think is the right thing, regardless of the political implications. What he needs to do is really two things, though, and it's hard to thread this needle. He needs to appeal to Republicans who, after all, are going to pick the Republican nominee for president.
Right.
They still overwhelmingly support the war.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, you know, his campaign is mindful of that and knows that a message of support for the war is good in the Republican primary. The problem for Senator McCain is that much of his political strength over the years, and certainly when he ran for president in 2000, was the independent vote. And those folks have turned overwhelmingly against the war. And so how he can sort of be the straight talker that he was 8 years ago and still hold this position on the war is a real challenge.
What happened to his fundraising effort? Why flagging so badly?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, if you ask the campaign, they say very clearly they don't think it was his message. They say that it was just a sort of organizational failure on their part to have enough fundraisers with the candidate, have a tracking system that let them know which of their big donors had contributed and which had not. You know, when you talk to people who are longtime observers of this process, they sort of shake their heads and wonder how that could possibly be with a campaign that has among the most experienced consultants and campaign managers. And so they wonder whether it really may have something more to do with what you and I are talking about here, which is a struggle to find a message that really resonates with the people who are his normal supporters.
And the layoffs we're hearing about today in his campaign headquarters, how deep? Is he still in the game?
You know, his campaign insists they are. I talked to them last night about the layoffs. They say it is largely minor, low-level people who are being trimmed off of a staff that has grown quite large, 120 people already on his campaign staff in his headquarters and in some of the early primary states like New Hampshire and Iowa. They say there are no major shakeup. It's not a major shakeup, no major campaign chairman or that level folks being trimmed, and they sort of cast it as a part of the overall reorganization that took place when they realized they had lost the money war in this first quarter.
Michael, let me just ask you now. Of course, you've got Giuliani out there, you've got Mitt Romney out there. Are they that different? They're not somehow as wrapped around the war as John McCain, but are their positions on the war really different from his?
Well, it's interesting. You know, there's very little daylight when you actually sort of pick apart where they are on supporting the current policy in Iraq. They all say essentially the same thing. They support it. They think we can't leave prematurely, and they all criticize the Democrats for trying to give some sort of a deadline. The one thing that's different, though, is that Senator McCain has been pushing for a surge in troops for years, since I think going back to 2003 or 2004. And so he is identified with this exact policy, whereas the other two, Mitt Romney, Mayor Giuliani, and some of the others, have more freedom to kind of touch on the issue of the surge, but then to sort of broaden the discussion into one about terrorism or about the, you know, greater foreign policy issues. Senator McCain finds it more difficult to do that, since essentially this was his idea in the first place.
And the market stroll moment in Baghdad that brought so much mockery down on him when it was revealed, you know, he suggested it was just a day in the park, and of course he was surrounded by troops and helicopters and Humvees. He sort of apologized for that on 60 Minutes, or said he misspoke. Does he shake that, or does that hang around his neck, the man who was known for straight talk?
Right. That's exactly the problem. That whole incident struck right at the heart, as one campaign consultant told me a couple of days ago, struck right at the heart of who John McCain is, who is this guy who is going to tell it to you like it is, no matter what the, you know, no matter what the consequences. That's why people flocked to his campaign 8 years ago. And when he went into that market and it was actually, there were some comments before he went over to Iraq, and then again, you know, sort of comments after the marketplace. He went and said, oh, you know, there's places you can walk around safely, and then, you know, the camera pulls back and there's, you know, these 100 troops and flak jackets and helicopters overhead. I mean, it just, you know, that's what was damaging to John McCain about that incident, and I think he's been struggling for the past week to get over it.
A big speech yesterday, very tough on the Democrats. The Democrats pushing back very hard. Barack Obama saying progress in Iraq cannot be measured by the same ideological fantasies that got us into this war. It must be measured by the reality of facts on the ground. That can't be the kind of criticism that Mr. Straight Talk can be happy hearing, a fantasy allegation.
Right. Ideological fantasy, that's rough. And I think, you know, for Senator McCain, the problem that illustrates the problem that he's going to have if he wins the nomination, which is, okay, so you get past the Republican nomination, somehow you appeal to Republicans who still support the war, and now you face a Democrat who, you know, whichever Democrat it is going to have a long history of opposing the war now. And, you know, the polls show that 65 to 70% of the American public generally, not just Democrats, but generally, oppose the war. And so how do you craft a campaign that wins you the nomination but that still leaves you a viable candidate for the general? And that's, you know, it's difficult for all the Republican candidates right now, but particularly for John McCain.
That's a tough formula to face. John McCain facing it straight on. Michael Scheer with The Washington Post, thanks very much for being with us.
All right. See you, Tom.
Let me turn to Jonathan Chait in Washington, senior editor and columnist at The New Republic and columnist for The Los Angeles Times. Jonathan, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
What's going on with John McCain?
Well, John McCain is trying to pursue the only chance he has of winning the presidency, which is a slim chance, but his only one, which is to hug President Bush on the one issue where he agrees with him and probably couldn't get away from it if he couldn't, and hope that this can kind of re-endear him to the Republican base that's so suspicious of him. He's in a desperate fight for his political life, which is not to say that he doesn't believe what he's saying, but I think there's been a misimpression that McCain is. And an impression that McCain is very much trying to foster, which is that he's doing something which is counter to his own interests, just because he believes it so strongly. But, I mean, I think here's a case where his beliefs and his interests coincide, and that is, you know, showing that he's more Catholic than the Pope on the war, and picking a fight with the media, picking a fight with Democrats, and so trying to show to conservatives that he really is one of them, and he isn't, you know, some traitor and some figure who's loved by the press and loved by Democrats.
The Wall Street Journal says this is his finest hour. You say he's gone to the dark side. What do you mean?
Well, look, a lot of people have forgotten just how far left John McCain moved from the end of 1999 through 2004. I don't even have time in your program to list all the issues in which he embraced liberal positions.
Campaign finance, funding, and abortion, and on and on.
Not so much. I mean, he had some straight comments on abortion, on, you know, taxes, on health care, on the environment, on all kinds of regulatory issues, on guns. He thought long and hard about switching to the Democratic Party.
Jonathan Chait with the New Republican, the L.A. Times, has joined us from Washington. In just a moment, David Brooks of the New York Times will join us as well. But let's listen to a little more John McCain yesterday saying, if the U.S. gets out, we could see Rwanda-style genocide in Iraq.
To enumerate the strategic interests at stake in Iraq does not address our moral obligation to a people we liberated from Saddam Hussein's tyranny. I suspect many in this audience and most members of Congress look back at America's failure to act to prevent genocide in Rwanda with shame. I know I do. But I fear the potential for genocide and ethnic cleansing in Iraq is even worse. The sectarian violence, the social divisions, the armaments, the weakened security apparatus of the state, all the ingredients are there unless we fight to prevent it. Our withdrawal will be coupled with a genocide in which we are complicit.
The threat of a genocide worse than Rwanda. John McCain yesterday. Jonathan Chait of the New Republic is with us. And right now, New York Times columnist David Brooks joins us from Bethesda, Maryland. David Brooks, thanks very much for being here.
Good to be with you.
The fatalist you call John McCain, there he is, worse than Rwanda if we go. But if he stays, he's facing at those poll numbers back here in the USA. Why the fatalist? What do you mean, David?
Well, first of all, it's worth pointing out that it's not only McCain who thinks things will get horrible. It's the National Intelligence Estimate. I noticed it's my colleagues at the Times, like John Burns, who thinks that life would be horrible if we withdrew. I spent about 8 hours with McCain yesterday, two long plane rides, two long bus rides. And what struck me about him, and he was very candid about this, you know, he's sliding in the polls, and he knows that. He's disappointing fundraising. And his attitude is, hey, I've had a great life. I may not be president, but I'm surrounded by people who are, you know, fighting in wars. I fought in a war, and I'm just going to say what I think. And I'm struck by how apolitical he's become. Of course, he is. Aides around him who think about the politics and who are, you know, trying to zing Obama and things like that. But I think he's decided, hey, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to say what I think. I'm going to do what I think is my duty and my obligation. And it's being for the surge. And he's been for the surge for 3 or 4 years now. He's been utterly consistent. And he'll let the politics take care of himself. And I think, you know, we're very cynical about politicians. But I think in this case, he's being who he is. He's trying to answer his highest calling.
We'll talk about the politics, but give us more on the man as you read him, David Brooks. And particularly, how does Vietnam run through his thinking now? He sat there as a prisoner of war for years in Vietnam. He saw the loss in Vietnam, but he also saw the suffering of the soldiers there. Now we've got these super long tours coming up for the Army in Iraq. How is the Vietnam experience, the POW experience, shaping his thinking now?
Well, I think there's a sadness. You know, I spent a lot of time also with him in 2000, and in some ways the campaigns are very much the same. They've got the same group of people, sort of the same happy spirit, the same stories get told. But in some ways it's different, and it is because of the war. And he's reacted to the war, as he says, with sadness, and because he didn't think we'd be sliding toward defeat for the second time in his lifetime. And what he talks about, and these are the stories he keeps coming back to, he talked about a man named Robbins who was shot in the eye in an attempt to rescue some of his friends in Iraq. and actually got up and walked to the ambulance, and he saw Robbins in Germany and was going to go see him again in Maryland. And so those stories kept coming up all of yesterday. He kept talking about that, and it overshadowed what he did. And I think he genuinely, sincerely does feel that, you know, losing the campaign, if that's what it comes to, is nothing compared to what those guys are sacrificing. So those are the stories he tells, and he had a few former POWs who were with him yesterday, and those were the stories they told each other. So, you know, I do think this has become a strangely apolitical moment for him. Not to say that the campaign is not a campaign. There are aides around him who are thinking about media strategies and all that other stuff. But for him, it is strangely apolitical right now.
Jonathan Chait, how do you hear that interpretation? John McCain as a fatalist at this point who's gone apolitical. It's a roundabout way back to the Straight Talk Express message.
Right. You know, look, a cherished part of the American, you know, myth is that our leaders should never really want to be president too badly. You know, we always scorn people who do. They have to be called to service and to go reluctantly and not care too much. Remember, Al Gore was savaged in 2000 because he wanted it too badly, and George W. Bush was praised because he always said he didn't really care if he won that much. He could just go back to his ranch and be a happy, simple businessman clearing brush. So, you know, politicians are always trying to create the appearance of not caring very much if they win, and just caring mostly about principle for obvious reasons. There may be some who believe it, but because saying so is so completely in their interest, I find it impossible to take any statement like that at face value.
So you're that cynical. Forget it. Despite his POW status, despite all of his record on the military, you see it just gaming. Do you think it can work?
I don't think it's just gaming. Look, it is what he believes on the war, clearly. But look, this is a guy who's reversed all his political convictions twice now in the last, you know, half dozen years. He went from conventional conservative Republican and had what I thought was, you know, a pretty genuine ideological epiphany. I thought genuine because it was pretty much against his interests at the time. He became essentially a liberal Democrat who was thinking very strongly about leaving the Republican Party and was, you know, much more liberal than many, many Democrats in the Senate. And now, you know, but then I think hit a breakpoint where he realized that he couldn't possibly win the presidency any other way than through the Republican Party. And that meant he had to move back to the right and embrace Bush. And so, you know, what he's doing comports completely with his only chance of winning the presidency, which is not a great chance, but his only chance. So it's possible that, you know, I mean, to say that he's doing this despite his political interests just doesn't seem to align with, you know, the facts that are available to us. What's inside his heart is not available to us, but the facts, you know, the external facts are available to us. And those facts suggest he's pursuing the only path, the only chance he has.
David Brooks, you see a fatalist. Jonathan Chait sees an opportunist.
Well, first, on the meta-analysis, you know, I spend a lot of time with politicians, and my firm belief, and a lot of it is private, over meals, is that they are less cynical, less calculating than we in the press corps make them out to be. They tend to be earnest, sincere professionals who are political. Of course, they're running for office. They understand the game of it. But they are much more earnest than we give them credit for. We think all their activities are based on poll reading and focus groups. But in fact, most of it is sort of a very simple, earnest reading of reality. And most of them are trying to do some good, some public good, and that's how they explain their lives. And that's one of the reasons, aside from the narcissism and the vanity, that they lead the horrible lives they, in fact, do lead. So I tend to think politicians are more sincere than I think Jonathan does. Second, on McCain, I don't think he's tacked a bit here and there, but he has always been a Teddy Roosevelt Republican, driven by honor, not by religion. He's not a libertarian. He's not a social conservative. He's a sort of Republican who used to exist in the days of Teddy Roosevelt, who scarcely exists now. To say he was a liberal Democrat, he was never that. And he's never been the sort of a Goldwater conservative either. He's been part of this other tradition, which is halfway in between.
David Brooks, Jonathan Chait, let me invite our listeners in from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Robert, you're on the air.
Yes, I can agree with David Brooks that John McCain is earnest and sincere. His reading of reality is earnest and sincere. I'd also say that John McCain is wrong. He voted for the war. He now characterizes pulling out as a reckless road. What was voting for the war?
Reckless going
earnest,
in?
Earnest and sincere and wrong.
Robert, were you ever a John McCain guy? Was there a time when you thought, I might vote for him?
No.
Okay, so you haven't turned on him, but you're not going to give him a green light on the road here. Robert, thanks for your call. David Brooks, you say it may work anyway. 10 months from now, what looks like going straight in the teeth of polls may look like a winning strategy. How?
Yeah, well, not because I'm a huge fan of the surge. I pray that it'll work, but I don't have high expectations. I think the country is just riven psychologically and culturally, and there's really no way to try to unify it around a central government, which is sort of the essence of the surge. I'm more with Joe Biden than believing for a soft partition. Nonetheless, I think, you know, we'll know whether the surge works by August or September, and that'll still be 4 or 5 months away from the primary, 3 or 4 months anyway, away from the first primary. And so by then, the election will not be about the surge. It'll be about the overall situation, especially in the Middle East, and I think it's likely to be a horrible situation. And I think voters will be looking for someone who's reasonably stable, reasonably strong, reasonably mature. And I think, you know, McCain may begin to look a little better there because he is, you know, I firmly believe that if he had been running this war, not Bush, not Rumsfeld, not Cheney, the situation would be much, much better. And voters may say, well, we didn't get him last time, but we could use him for this time. And so he may come back, and I suspect he will.
Jonathan Chait, our caller from Cedar Rapids, says he was wrong then. Why should we believe he's right now?
Well, look, I certainly think he was sincere in supporting the war when it started, and I think he's sincere now. And I do think, you know, I don't think he's an opportunist about everything, and I think few politicians are. I think almost every politician has some things they believe. I think what John McCain believes is that he is the best suited person to lead the country in all sorts of ways, and especially in foreign policy. And beyond that, he's really willing to say lots of things to get to that goal because he thinks, you know, ultimately he's making compromises in pursuit of some larger good. I think that's something that, you know, every politician believes in, or at least is able to convince themselves to believe.
Let's get a call from Mark in Chicopee, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to bring, I guess, a lot of cynicism in it. I'm a Theodore White Making of the President fan, and I really believe that you have to look at the market for a certain candidate. My grandfather had an Edsel, and the problem with the Edsel wasn't that it was a real bad car. It was there was no market for it. John McCain, if he is looking to get support from conservatives, okay, he is for the war, and he supports our troops. But as your experts have said, he's gone way to the left on many issues. The conservatives and Republicans care about as much or more than the war.
But what are you saying, Mark? That he's so insincere on the war that he's saying he's for it, even though he's secretly against it?
No. I believe he's for the war, but when it comes to other issues, immigration, abortion, he really swung so far to the left on all these other issues. If there are liberals, believe it or not, who are for the war, but they have a candidate in Hillary Clinton. There are independents of a progressive nature. They have Giuliani.
Maybe they do. Mark, thanks for that. David Brooks, how do you see McCain? Let's just look within his own party here. Look at Giuliani, look at Romney, look at even Fred Thompson, if and when. Does McCain's position that he's staking out here so high profile somehow advantage him over them, or can they kind of ride in the backdraft of John McCain and be better positioned ultimately?
In some ways, they're better positioned. Democrats and Republicans both, I think, value partisanship over philosophy in most cases. They want a party loyalist more than they want someone who's philosophically loyal. So Giuliani's up in the polls, even though he's to the left of McCain on many, many issues, farther outside the mainstream of the Republican Party, because he has been a strong party man. He's been loyal to the party. He's defended the party. He's never bucked the party, or not in a sort of an aggressive attacking mode. McCain has. McCain has expressed his dissatisfaction with the party on things like global warming and campaign finance He is not a loyal party man. Every Tuesday, the Republicans have a lunch called the Senate Policy Lunch, and all the senators get up there and they agree on what they call the message of the week. McCain sits in the back room taunting them because he doesn't believe there should be one unified message of the week, and that's just the nature of who he is. And for that heterodoxy, a lot of Republicans will never trust him because they don't think he'll be loyal to the party up and down the line. And so that's one of the reasons there is such hostility. People believe in parties. They want to vote for someone who's loyal to the party. And so he has that high level of distrust. And that's you know, really more of a problem for him, I think, than the war stance.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Edward in Norway, South Carolina. Edward, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Edward L. Burnham from Norway, South Carolina.
Good to have you. What do you see, Edward?
Well, as I was telling your producer, I'm a lifelong supporter of, you know, of John McCain. He was my hero at one point back in 2000, and I secretly hoped he would leave the Republican Party and form a third party to represent Middle America, which I feel like a lot of us, you know, fall into that category.
How do you see him now, Edward?
Well, after the episode when Bush attacked him down here in South Carolina, and in my opinion, he failed to stand up for his family, it just it became a character issue for me. And I feel like that John has just now devoid pretty much of anything meaningful except supporting George Bush. I guess that's the only route he can take.
Is he right on the war?
I think he's wrong on the war. You know, I think a lot of this is, you know, very similar to what happened in Vietnam. In fact, you know, I have personally witnessed a Vietnam vet commit suicide, so I have a personal stake in this. But the rhetoric seems to be the same, but we're trying to kill an idea with a bullet, just like we did in Vietnam, and we're not going to defeat communism with a bullet, and we're not going to defeat Islamic radicals with a bullet, because you can't kill an idea with a bullet.
Edward, thanks for your call. Jonathan Chait, you hear the skepticism from listeners right now from a couple of different directions there. They're not jumping back on the Straight Talk Express here yet.
Right. I mean, McCain's base of support was independent in 2000, and it became more and more independent and Democratic, you know, from 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. And that's the period where he was, you know, breaking with the Republican Party on everything. He was sponsoring ambitious health care legislation and financial reforms, gun control. He was pretty much co-sponsoring the entire Democratic agenda. And polls showed that his whole base of support had pretty much moved out of the Republican Party and into the independence of Democrats. So, you know, Republicans aren't fools. They remember at least some of what went on here, and so they're looking for some sign. I think appropriately so. They would be stupid not to. That this was some kind of aberration. So, you know, McCain has, you know, stopped talking about all these liberal issues that he was talking about before. He, you know, sort of renounced his opposition to Bush tax cuts and embraced supply side economics and said that, you know, tax cuts always raise revenues and embraced the dogma. But, you know, the problem is this at best brings him into a tie with the other leading Republican candidates. So the only thing he can do to sort of pull the only issue where he could distinguish himself as a conservative is on the war because he was so prominent.
Jonathan Chait of the New Republic is with us. David Brooks, thanks very much for being here.
Good to be with you.
Mitch is calling from Rowley, Massachusetts. Mitch, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Mitch Hardy, Rowley, Mass. I'm a yellow dog Republican. I voted for Bush's every chance I've got. I'm 100% behind John McCain.
What puts you there, Mitch?
His support for America's cause in this war is probably number one, that and the man's integrity. Clearly, his campaign prospects are tied up in the war, at least probably. But it's important to understand that Americans, the majority of Americans, are opposed to the war, not because they're opposed to what we're doing, they're opposed because we're losing. Americans like to win their wars. And one thing I can guarantee you is, however the political landscape looks now, a year, year and a half from now, it's going to look different. If a year and a half from now it looks like we're winning this war, John McCain is going to come up smelling like roses, and the Democrats are going to look like yesterday's mush.
And do you really think there's a chance of that there's something going on that could turn the tide that significantly? You've still got that hope, Mitch.
Absolutely, and there's another thing that might change. If the war widens, if we get involved with Iran, and if it starts to look less like Vietnam and more like World War II, America's going to be looking for a war president, and it ain't going to be Barack Obama.
Barack Obama, who says John McCain's in the same ideological fantasies that got us into this war. You see it just the other way. Mitch, we've got it. Jonathan Chait, you know, there's the same idea. If this turns around, he's got a winner. If he doesn't, has he just put all his cards, you know, on one bet here, all his chips?
Well, he has, but remember, he can also, you know, tack back left after he gets the nomination. He's just got to get the nomination, and that's, you know, a year away. And remember, George W. Bush, after the Bob Jones South Carolina story in 2000, that's it. He's painted himself as in the far right corner. He'll never get out. But he did get out. So, you know, McCain's got plenty of time to get out.
I want to get a view on the war itself and John McCain's view of it, his description of it. We're joined right now from Rome, actually, by Alan Pizzies, correspondent for CBS News. He's just back last week from a five-week reporting trip in Iraq. He has covered wars, all over the place for a long time. Much honored. Alan Pizzies, thank you very much for being with us.
Nice to join you.
What have you made, listening in from Rome, just back with your own view of Iraq, of the way John McCain has attempted to depict the war there, the progress he talks about? Cautious, you know, he's backed down some of that kind of a walk-in-the-park description of the Baghdad market, but he's still saying, we can do this. I see progress. The surge can work. You've just come back, Alan. How do you hear that? How do you see it?
I'm not quite as optimistic as Mr. McCain, I'm afraid. Yes, there are some elements of the surge that are working. For example, when I was there, I managed to go into Sadr City, where Iraqi troops were actually leading the searching with Americans backing them up. We were able to walk the streets. That's something. But then you look at the news today and you see that there's a suicide bomb inside the cafeteria of the parliament. You see that they've blown up a bridge. Excuse me. And on top of that, I just know what I get from ordinary Iraqis. I flew out of Iraq with an Iraqi cameraman who's a good friend of mine. He's a very brave, decent, and honorable man. He was going out to Jordan to see his family, his wife and two children that he sent out. And he said to me, you know, I just don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. 14 months ago, I thought we had a chance. Today, I do not think I have a country anymore, and my problem is nobody wants me. That's the kind of attitude that I find among the Iraqis that I know. They just don't see an end to it. They just don't see that anybody's winning, but they do see themselves as losing. So I think, I'm not sure where Mr. McCain gets his optimism from, but I don't detect that on the streets of Baghdad among the people that I know.
John McCain says the press itself is part of the problem. It's depicting, you know, the war in darker terms than need be.
Well, I found Mr. McCain's speech interesting. For example, he said that America has a vital interest in preventing the emergence of Iraq as a wild west for terrorists. He said, in Iraq today, terrorists resort to levels of barbarism that shock the world. And then as a throwaway line, he said that when he was in Iraq, I quote, I just returned from my fifth visit. Unlike the veterans here today, I risk nothing more threatening than a hostile press corps. Well, if all those things Mr. McCain described are actually happening or may happen, and the worst he saw was a hostile press corps, puts a whole new meaning on the pen is mightier than the sword, doesn't it?
Yes, I guess. Pete's calling from Narragansett, Rhode Island. Pete, you're on the air with Alan Pizzies and Jonathan Chait.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I don't think he's viable at all at this point. I pray that he's not viable. I think he was viable in 2000. I would have voted for him in 2000. I think this time he's not running as an American president. All right, he's trying to be a Republican candidate. And I can remember growing up that when blind party loyalty was what we used to, in America, we used to accuse the USSR and China from doing, you know.
But this is supposed to be Mr. Independent. I mean, that has been his hallmark, Maverick.
8 years ago. 8 years ago, he was Mr. Independent. Today, he's drinking the Kool-Aid. He's displaying inflexibility, all right, which is what is why we are in the mess that we're in right now. I think that he states that pulling out is the easier, softer way. But it is not staying there right now is the easier, softer way. Pulling out is going to take courage, all right? And I think we need to pull out, but I think we need to pull out toward Kurdistan, and I think we need to concentrate up there, let the Shiites and the Sunnis work it out with Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Pete, so you've got a plan, but you're not buying John McCain's, and we hear that. We thank you for your call. Let's get another quickly here from Washington. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello. Good to speak with you, Tom. Jonathan, we actually lived together briefly in a group house in Cleveland Park. At the time, I was working for Jim Leach, who is a Republican liberal from Iowa.
Good to hear from you, Tom.
Thank you. I basically wanted to say, you know, that there's some frustration here, both as a former Republican, I've since joined the Democratic Party, would support Obama in the coming race, but feel like the liberal moderate wing of the party has truly died out. And, I mean, Leach was not reelected this year. He certainly had quite a war to carry. And I think McCain's, you know, the notion that David Brooks could say that McCain could somehow resuscitate the Theodore Roosevelt wing of the party with a war on his back is the height of optimism, if not just Pollyanna-ish. I don't think, oddly enough, that McCain would be a bad president. I worked for him in 2000. I think I agree with a lot of callers who say back then he was a more viable, a more honest candidate. I was very interested to see him through 2004. But whatever gravitas he got from being the candidate who didn't drink the Kool-Aid or didn't have to wasn't tied down by the catechism of either party, I think that's gone. And so he becomes a much less attractive candidate if he even makes it to the general.
Do you think his own party will eat him alive then, Aaron?
I don't think he's going to make it through. Eat him alive might be a little strong, but I just think that there's too much of a base out there that wants a Reagan-esque candidate and someone who's at least flirted with both bipartisanship and a very enfeebled wing of the party, a progressive wing of the Republican Party. You know, with eventually, I mean, you don't see a lot of Republicans in the Northeast
yep,
now.
Yep. Aaron, we've got it. Let me put it to your old friend Jonathan Chait. Jonathan,
right.
you see him as an opportunist, but Aaron says, in a way, the implication of what he's saying is, how can you call him an opportunist? What's the opportunity he's turning to?
He's turning to the only opportunity he has to win the Republican nomination. It's the only way he can reassure the conservative base that he really is one of them. But Aaron is right about the dying out of the liberal wing of the Republican Party, which is, you know— I thought McCain's campaign was so historically significant and so hopeful in 2000 because I thought he could revive that progressive Republican tradition. You know, I've written a book that's coming out in September called The Big Con, and part of it is about how that wing of the Republican Party died and was crushed, and the crushing of the McCain candidacy, and the fact that the Republicans kind of forced McCain to disavow all of his heterodox positions is kind of the final death blow of the very sad decline of what was once a great force in American politics.
Aaron in Washington, thanks for your call. Let's get one from Somerville, Massachusetts. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I don't think McCain's viable either. I'm a Democrat. I've been against the war the entire time, and I do think we should withdraw, but I do think that he is, I think he is a principled man, and I don't think it's smart to set an exact timetable. It irritates me that the Democrats are doing that, you know, solely because I think it is, you know, it could come back and you know, bite them on the behind.
Yeah, so be careful how you paint the way out. Alan Pizzi, what about that? Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid responding yesterday. Of course, McCain attacked the Democrats very harshly. Senator Reid saying, look, the Pope in your town, Alan, Rome, the Pope says it's continual slaughter. The Pope says nothing good is coming from Iraq. So let Senator McCain challenge the Pope, but not me. But is he right to challenge the Democrats here on the deadline setting? I mean, I think Americans want something that will at least minimize the damage, even if we're going.
I don't think it's up to me to say there should be a deadline, but I do think that you got to, if you don't have an end plan, a strategy, then where are you going? And I think that there's an awful lot of political kicking around of Iraq, and nobody's that I've seen is actually sitting down and saying, this is how we would define victory. We, the United States, you, the United States, would define victory. This is what would constitute a point where it would be viable to hand over. Nobody seems to have any ideas like that. It just seems to be a kicking it back and forth. You're bad guys if you don't. If you set a deadline, you're not supporting the troops. They tie pork barrel things onto troop funding. Mm. I mean, it seems to me that nobody's actually focusing on the real issue of what the hell is winning. I don't think anybody knows.
Let's go to Ann in Amesbury, Massachusetts. Ann, how do you see it?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I'd like to step back and just make a comment about the whole format of this conversation, if I might.
Please.
I think it's interesting that I'm the first woman who has called.
I noticed that this morning. What's that about, Ann?
Well, I think that's about this whole conversation that we're having reminds me more and more of a sports talk show. And it becomes our side against their side. Now, that fellow who called up and called himself a yellow dog Republican, just seemed so clearly to be, it's going to be my side no matter what. David Brooks may believe people want to vote party lines, but people that I speak to are more and more disgusted with the parties. And he says, David Brooks also said, politicians genuinely want to do some public good. Well, heaven's sakes, what do they think we elect them for? To provide entertainment?
And so take the sides out of it and take John McCain on his merits, on what he's saying. How do you assess it?
McCain, I didn't trust him when he moved closer to the left, closer to my position, I have to admit. And I just think he's clearly an opportunist in this situation. He's, as you said in the beginning, fighting for his political life. And I think it's too bad that they're not fighting for the life of perhaps the planet.
So broaden it out. Don't make it sides. We're not certainly not trying to do that. But you know, I wonder, Jonathan Chait, picking up on that, I mean, Americans don't want to leave a genocide worse than Rwanda in Iraq, as bad as it's become already. David Brooks says, you know, the country might just end up coming around to someone who stood steady in his support, even if it's looks like an unpopular position right now. Can you imagine that?
Sure, I can imagine that. It's just very hard to predict how these events are going to go in the future. And it looks very bad now, and it probably will be very bad a year from now. But you don't know. And, you know, could be right. Absolutely. You just, it's just, you know, you can be very foolish trying to make predictions like this about something so complex with any certainty.
Alan Pizzi, what about the military in Iraq? We were talking with the Washington Post, Tom Ricks, recently said that all eyes are on September, October there, and whether they can indeed have some concrete progress that they can still point to at that point. Bombs in the green zone today, bridge being blown. Are you hearing optimism from the U.S. military in Iraq that might back up John McCain's commitment there? Alan Pizzi.
Sorry. I didn't realize you were talking to me. Yes. You know, I spent a fair amount of time with troops, and they all come down to the same thing. They're there to do a job. They want to do the job, but they want to know what the end of the job is going to be. But they definitely feel that that they all feel they're doing something good. But then I suppose if you've got to risk your life every day, you can't sit around and think it's a hopeless thing. I think they would all go home tomorrow if you let them. But they do. If they're given a job, they want to do it. That's the way they see it.
And at the level of the officer corps, get up near Petraeus or as close as you came. What's the confidence level that you're hearing?
Well, I sat down for a half an hour with General Petraeus in an interview, and I think he's the most realistic officer that I've ever spoken to. He has a very firm grasp of what's going on. His troops on the ground love him. And when you talk to him, he says what he doesn't know. He doesn't try to snow job you. I think he knows that he's really in a bad position, that it's all coming down on him. And he'll do the best he can, but I don't think he thinks, didn't get the impression that he thought, was trying to tell me, success is around the corner, I can make this work. The impression I got was that Petraeus knew that he had a job to do and he would do his darndest to do it. And whether it could be done, he wasn't going to say, yes, I can, but he certainly wasn't going to say, no, I can't either.
Alan Pizzi with CBS News, just back from Iraq, joining us from Rome. Alan, thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jonathan Chait, John McCain saw one loss in Vietnam up close. You know, you can't help but think that he's sincere in dreading the idea of another loss here.
Absolutely. He is sincere, and he supported the war. He believed in it. I think he still believes in it. I do think his speech yesterday was incredibly disingenuous in any number of ways. Look, how much time do I have?
20 seconds, my friend.
He was slandering the Democrats who were cheering when they passed the resolution because the Democrats sincerely believe that there's no way we can win and they want young Americans to stop dying in what they believe to be a lost cause. So to slander that as cheering for the enemies is just completely outrageous and I think, you know, forfeits any legitimate claim to be a unifying commander-in-chief that he's presented himself.
And with that, off we go. Jonathan Chait, New Republic, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.